I need to be reading a Dr. Seuss story or something like that instead of talking about critical race theory. So for all the little ones here, I really do apologize. Critical race theory, I'm sorry, guys. It's just an impossible topic to break down for a six-year-old. So I'm trusting all the adults here to put on your thinking caps because I'm about to hit you with a fire hydrant of information this morning. And but this is a topic that we as Christians, we have to confront it. We have to confront it. So I'm not going to sugarcoat anything this morning. This is a demonic, evil worldview. Critical race theory is. So we're going to talk about that this morning, and I'm going to try to get through the information that I have as quickly as possible. But let me give you a heads up before we get started. One of the things I do in my research, regardless of what the topic is, but especially this topic of critical race theory, I have spent countless hours reading critical race theories. And one of the things we need to do as apologists is to be able to know what critical race theorists believe themselves. And the best way to find out what a critical race theorist believes is to read a critical race theorist. Read their books, read their white papers, read their commentaries. So I've spent countless hours doing that. Now, I say all that to say that this morning you're going to hear some quotes that I'm going to cite from critical race theorists that are going to make absolutely zero sense. They will make no sense. You're going to hear some of the most high-level, multi-syllabic, fancy-sounding, what do you guys say here in Texas, all hat, no cattle? It's going to be like that. So I'm just letting you know in advance, but I'm doing that for a reason, because you need to understand how these people think. Most critical race theorists, their books are written by folks who have PhDs and even postdoctoral level degrees in sociology, psychology, and education. And most of their books are written for that peer group of theirs. So they write these books to self-congratulate themselves and pat themselves on the back. So when you hear a quote, and I promise you, it's not going to make any sense. I'm just telling you. But when you hear that, understand that they're writing for one another. They're not writing for people like you and me. Because the goal is not for you to understand critical race theory. That's not the goal. The goal is for you to not understand critical race theory. The goal is to keep you ignorant about what critical race theory is. So they write these books. And if you were to go on Amazon or somewhere, you would find that these books are very expensive. Because they're textbooks. They're not critical race theories for dummies. There's not that. These are higher echelon academic textbooks that are written for PhDs for other PhDs. Okay? So you have been warned. Now, when you hear me cite someone in this message that I'm about to give and you don't understand it, just understand I don't understand it either. I'm just giving you insight into how these people think. So that's where we must begin, okay? So when it comes to understanding critical race theory, what you and I must initially understand is that critical race theory, or CRT for short, is not some kind of Big Bang proposition. And what I mean by that is that critical race theory as a worldview, it's not a belief system that came about ex nihilo. Ex nihilo is a Latin phrase. Ex means out of or from. Nihilo means nothing. That's where we get the English word nihilism or nihilist. So critical race theory is not some ex nihilo idea that just came about out of nothing, out of nowhere. Critical race theory has a definitive genesis, and that genesis begins with a worldview that was originally advanced by two 19th century German philosophers whose names were Karl Marx, who lived from 1818 to 1883, and Friedrich Engels, E-N-G-E-L-S, who lived from 1820 to 1895, and that worldview is commonly referred to as Marxism. Now, there's an ideological umbilical cord, if I can use that wording, that inexorably connects critical race theory with Marxism. Now, why this is important for you to know is because one of the first things the critical race theorist will tell you is that critical race theory has nothing to do with Marxism. But I'm here to tell you it has everything to do with Marxism. Matter of fact, critical race theory was born out of Marxism, and we're going to walk through that this morning. And that's the umbilical cord. That's why I use that sort of word picture, because an umbilical cord attaches the mother to the to her unborn child. In the same way, ideologically, Marxism is the umbilical cord that ties itself to critical race theory. And that umbilical cord that ties the two together, that ties Marxism and CRT together, is a mutual disdain of and contempt for capitalism. Like Marxism, critical race theory views capitalism as the fundamental cause of racism in America. That's because in critical race theory, capitalism is what breeds white supremacy. And it's white supremacy that critical race theorists, or CRITs, they call themselves CRITs for short. So CRITs is sort of an abbreviation for critical race theorists. CRITs say, well, we're using critical race theory to rid America of white supremacy. They purportedly say that that's the reason. But like Marxism, critical race theory is fundamentally a philosophy of class struggle. Critical race theory is fundamentally a philosophy of class struggle in which the oppression, injustice, and inequality of capitalism must be replaced with a more just, equitable, and inclusive system, namely socialism. Marxist professor Dr. Epifanio San Juan Jr. expresses that vision quite explicitly in a 2005 white paper published in the Michigan Journal of Race and Law titled From Race to Class Struggle, subtitled Reproblematizing Critical Race Theory. Reproblematizing Critical Race Theory. And in that white paper, Dr. San Juan says this, quote, alert. This is one of the first nonsensical quotes that you're going to hear. Dr. San Juan says this, quote, a study of racist practices and institutions divorced from the underlying determinant structure of capital accumulation and class rule, which allows such practices and institutions to exercise their naturalizing force, can only perpetuate an abstract metaphysics of race and a discourse of power that would reinforce the continuing reification or commodification of human relations in everyday life. Now, if you understood a word that I just read, raise your hand. Continuing to quote Dr. San Juan, we cannot multiply static determinations in an atomistic manner and at the same time acquire an intelligible totality of knowledge, which we need for formulating strategies of radical social transformation. A first step in this project of renewing critical race theory is simple to state but difficult to execute. We must begin with the concept of class as an antagonistic relation between labor and capital, and then proceed to analyze or criticize how the determinant of race is played out historically in the class-conflicted structure of capitalism and its political and ideological processes of class rule, unquote. Now, I don't have any idea what Dr. San Juan just said here, but let me take a stab at it. What you're hearing in Dr. San Juan is, number one, a reinforcement of my original thesis that capitalism is the enemy in critical race theory. Number two, what you heard from Dr. San Juan's own mouth is that the objective of critical race theory is to divide people into classes and then pit those people against one another. That's exactly what's happening. Dr. San Juan is unambiguous in that in order for critical race theory to be most advantageous toward achieving the, quote, radical social transformation, unquote, that he and others who share his worldview and vision, it must be posited in such a way as to mirror the most important tenet upon which Marxism is built. And that tenet is the idea of class as an antagonistic relation between labor and capital. In other words, what Dr. San Juan is saying is that we have to pit the haves against the have-nots, just like Karl Marx did. But in Karl Marx's day, he would call it the bourgeois versus the proletariat. But in critical race theory, it's the blacks versus the whites. It's the haves versus the have-nots. It's the capitalists versus the socialists. It is that same ideological interconnectedness that is expressed in a June 15, 2020 article on the website Marxism.com titled Black Struggle and the Socialist Revolution. That article reads as follows, quote, the struggle against racism and discrimination is of crucial importance for revolutionary Marxists. Now, I find this statement interesting because Karl Marx was probably one of the most egregious racists who ever lived. Karl Marx was a Jew who hated Jews. He hated Jews. He hated Asians. He hated blacks. He hated Hispanics. He hated Latinos. Matter of fact, there was not an ethnic category on the planet that Karl Marx did not hate. And yet here is the website Marxism.com saying that Marxists have always struggled for equality in terms of the races. That's a flat out lie, because Karl Marx himself was a racist. I'm continuing with this quote from the website Marxism.com. "We fight at all times against all forms of oppression and discrimination, but we do this while fighting for maximum unity of the working class across lines of gender, race, ethnicity, and religion, always linking this to the struggle for the revolutionary socialist transformation of society." So they're saying in their own words that socialism is the goal. "Capitalism is the enemy. We must replace capitalism with socialism." I'm continuing to quote from Marxism.com. "There is no solution within the limits of capitalism. It is above all a class question." So there you have the classism again being referenced. "And as always, we start with our general program. Our task as Marxists is to raise class unity, consciousness, and confidence. We do not fight only for immediate gains, but also to raise the perspective and potential for plenty of jobs, healthcare, housing, and education for all under socialism. We do not merely seek a more fair division of capitalist scarcity. United class struggle is the only way forward." So here you have this continuing emphasis on class, 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 and putting people into different groups for the sole purpose of pitting those groups against one another to create this sort of antagonistic culture within the culture. The quote I just read, the phrase "it is above all a class question" cannot be overemphasized, because critical race theory is fundamentally a philosophy of class struggle. Do not forget that. If you don't remember a single word I say this morning, don't forget that. Critical race theory is all about class and pitting those classes against one another. It's vitally important that you remember that, because in critical race theory, the idea of race is a social construct. It's a social construct. Critical race theory does not see or define race as a fixed, unchangeable, immutable, and static aspect of one's personhood that is grounded in biology or science or, for that matter, theology. Now, as Christians, every Christian in this room, whether you know it or not, is a theologian. You're not just responsible for reading your Bible, you're responsible for studying it. Now, in that context, I'm going to give you a one-verse apologetic against the idea of race to demonstrate that race is a myth. I'm going to give you one verse. If you have your Bibles, turn to Acts chapter 17. Acts chapter 17, I'm going to give you one verse from the Bible to debunk the idea of race as a reality. Acts chapter 17, verse 26. Acts 17, verse 26. I'm going to be reading from the New American Standard Translation. And in that translation, Acts 17, 26 reads, "And he," that is God, "made from one man," that one man is Adam, "every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation." Now, why is that verse important? That verse is important because if you look at the word nation, the noun nation in English in that verse, in the Greek, that word nation is the Greek noun ethnos, from which we get our English word ethnicity. So the correct word to use as Christians is ethnicity, not race. There is no such thing as race. There is one human race, there's one human genus that is comprised of multiple ethnicities. So biblically, the word is ethnicity, not race. Show of hands, because here in Texas, my wife and I are from California. California has a very diverse, eclectic, you might say, selection of types of foods that you can eat. You have the same thing here. In Texas, you can pretty much get any type of food you want here in Texas. How many of you have ever eaten at a restaurant that specialized in racial cuisine? What do these restaurants specialize in? They specialize in ethnic cuisine, don't they? So you get my point. The Bible even proves that. You've never bought a cookbook that specializes in racial recipes. They prepare ethnic cuisine. So understand, this is my point when I say if you're a Christian, you're to be a theologian. You're to know how to answer the critical race theorists when it comes to race from what the Bible says. And here's a one-verse apologetic. This is the only verse you need in the entire Bible. This is the only verse you need to debunk the idea of race. Now, that race is a social construct is crucial for us to understand, because to understand that is also to understand why critical race theory, not unlike Marxism itself, emphasizes the deconstruction of social institutions. You see, the critical race theorists would say, well, salvation comes by deconstructing all these racist institutions and systems. Now, in saying that, they can't tell you what's racist about these institutions and systems, because in critical race theory, they don't have to. All they have to do is say that it's racist, that the institution is racist, that the system is racist. Now, biblically, I'm going to use the term racist just for the sake of conversation. Biblically, salvation comes when the Holy Spirit regenerates the person's heart and they think differently about each other. But in critical race theory, that's not the kind of salvation they're talking about. No, in critical race theory, we got to destroy, we got to deconstruct, we got to rebuild what already exists. We just need to do it anew. So you need to understand that in critical race theory, race has nothing to do with skin color alone. It can be anything. It can be anything. That's what I mean when I say race is a social construct. It's a social construct because in critical race theory, they get to redefine, they get to change the meaning of words. So if you thought that in critical race theory, race meant only skin color, it doesn't mean that. Race means position. Race means power. Race means opportunity. Race means advantage. Race means oppression. Race means any number of things. And the definition changes from day to day. So, for instance, if I were to say to you, well, I'm a black person, you would think that by saying I'm black, that black is my race. Well, even if you were to argue that my race is black, the fact remains is that my black skin is not going to change. That's not going to change. There's nothing I can do about this. I had no choice in this. I was born with this. But the critical race theorist, because limiting the definition of race to just skin color doesn't get them what they want, they have to subsume under the word race all other meanings, all of any number of other meanings, so that they ultimately get what they want. Which is, and what do they want? We'll get to that in a minute. You got to keep listening. But the point is this, is that viewing race as an unchangeable biological aspect of your personhood doesn't get them what they want. So they have to define race in other ways. And that's why I say critical race theory is a worldview. Critical race theory, I'm going to touch on this again later. You hear critical race theorists say all the time, well, critical race theory is just another way of teaching history. No, it's not. No, it's not. You heard me quote Dr. Epifanio San Juan Jr. just a couple of minutes ago, and I hope you were following me in the title of that white paper that I quoted from. The subtitle of that white paper was Reproblematizing Critical Race Theory. This is what critical race theorists do. What they'll do is they'll selectively go back in history, and it's only the history of America. It's never world history. It's only the history of America, and it's always American slavery. They'll go back and they'll subjectively select a point in time in the history of America, and they'll bring that into the present day towards the goal of reproblematizing that issue. They want to reproblematize it. So what they'll do is they'll go back, and like how I like to put it, they'll resurrect an already settled historical issue, bring that into the present day so as to reproblematize it in such a way as to make you believe that that problem still exists in 2022. So you'll see or hear people talk about, well, America's role in slavery, or how America discriminated against black people in the 60s, as if those issues haven't been resolved. So they reproblematize them anew. That's what that word means, because they have an end goal in mind. We have to reproblematize these issues in order to get what we want. Okay? So just a footnote on the whole slavery thing, because that's the one issue that the critical race theorists will not let go. It's all about slavery. It's slavery, 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 slavery. Do you know that, and this is a historical fact, you can do your own research on this, in the 440 some odd years of the transatlantic slave trade that went from the 1400s to the 1800s. Now, America didn't become a nation until 1776, but I'm going to use the word nation for sake of conversation. If you were to list the top 10 nations that participated in the transatlantic slave trade, where do you think the United States would be? The top 10. To hear critical race theorists, America would be number one. America, in the mind of the critical race theorists, America is the number one offender when it came to the transatlantic slave trade. But in reality, if you were to list the top 10 countries in which slaves were deported from West Africa and then loaded off onto other shores, the United States would be number eight. Eight out of 10. The number one nation that took in the most slaves during that 400 and some odd year period was Brazil. Brazil took in almost 6 million African slaves onto its shores. Whereas North America, the United States, in the entirety of that 440 year window, took less than 300,000 in over 400 years. Okay. But the critical race theorist continues to re-problematize slavery because there's something that they want from that. This is why they weaponize statistics. And what I mean by that is that critical race theorists subjectively use statistics as a means to form and propagate the misleading narrative that any socioeconomic differences that may exist, particularly between blacks and whites in America, are actually disparities. So there's a book that you might be familiar with called Divided by Faith. I don't know, some of you in this room may have read that book. It was authored by Michael Emerson and Christian Smith. That book was replete with statistics between blacks and whites. How much money a black person makes versus a white person. How much the median household income a black person has versus a white person. What that book did was it presented those differences in statistics and then presented them as disparities. Now, the reason I'm harping on this is because there's a distinction that you need to understand. Not every difference is a disparity. Okay? So let me give you a real-time example. So I'm standing here up on this podium. You're sitting out there. So there's an obvious height variance between where I am and where you are, correct? Would you say that height variance is a difference or a disparity? It's a difference. Why isn't it a disparity? Exactly right. This is only a disparity if at some point we started off at the same level. Either I was down there or you were up here and we were all up here and that's the way it was supposed to be. And then something got broken somewhere. Someone cheated, something got distorted somewhere. But the fact that I'm here and you're there, that's not a disparity. That doesn't put you at any disadvantage of anything, and I'm not at any advantage of anything. It's just a difference. You're at a different height level than I am. But what critical race theorists do is they'll throw out these statistics subjectively and say that all these differences between these different ethnic groups, especially economically, that these are disparities that need to be fixed because somebody cheated somewhere. And you know who cheated? White people. It's always white people. In critical race theory, the only sin is the sin of being white. That's the only sin there is. I want to talk about that a little bit later. But what I'm trying to say to you is that not every difference is a disparity. Sometimes it's just a difference. That's all it is. It's just a difference. Thomas Sowell, who some of you may be familiar with, in his book titled Discrimination and Disparity, said this. He said, quote, "The crucial question is not whether evils exist, but whether the evils of the past or present are automatically the cause of major economic, educational, and other social disparities today." You see, this is what the critical race theorists will argue. They would argue that every single distinction, especially economic distinctions between white people and black people, is somebody's fault. And that somebody is always somebody white. Now, I was thinking to myself as we were driving out here, I said, I hope they're ready to hear some uncomfortable stuff. Because perhaps you've never heard anyone say any of these kind of things before. If that makes you uncomfortable, I hope it doesn't make you uncomfortable, but if it does, I think that's a good thing, because you need to hear these things about critical race theory. Critical race theory is what I call a stealth worldview. Stealth in that it doesn't want you to recognize it for what it really is. You may be hearing terms today like diversity, equity, and inclusion, social and emotional learning, ethnic studies, cultural relevant teaching. Those are all critical race theory by another name. Those of you who are in this room who may be working in the public school systems, or you may have children in public schools, if your child or your school administrator says to you, okay, we're going to launch an ethnic studies program, beware. That's critical race theory. Diversity, equity, and inclusion is critical race theory. Social and emotional learning, what they call SEL, critical race theory. Critical race theory is a camouflaged, demonic, satanic worldview. So don't expect a critical race theorist to come up in your school and say, oh yeah, we're going to start teaching critical race theory to your fifth grader. They're not going to say that. Or your corporation where you work, we're going to launch a critical race theory program. They're not going to say that. Because critical race theory doesn't want you to see it for what it really is. That's why I call it a stealth ideology. So Thomas Sowell is exactly right. The crucial question is not whether evils exist. Of course evils exist. We live in a sinful world that is under, according to 1 John 5:19, is under the power of the evil one. So of course evils exist. But the question is whether those evils of the past or present are automatically the cause. That's the key word. Are they automatically the cause? Or are there some other factors in here? The critical race theorists would just presume, yeah, they are the automatically the cause of some economic, educational, or some other social disparity. So we need to tear these systems down, tear these institutions down, and rebuild them. We need to restructure them. Now, I've spoken to this point about the ideological connectedness between critical race theory and Marxism, but there's a chronological connectedness as well. And what I want to walk you through now is the chronology of critical race theory and explain to you how we got here. How did we get here? Where did critical race theory come from? Well, we have to go back to 1920s in Germany and what we call critical theory, or the Frankfurt School. The Frankfurt School. Critical theory, which is really the formal name of the Frankfurt School. Critical theory, by definition, provides a specific interpretation of Marxist philosophy with regard to a critique of mass culture. That's just a way of saying, in critical theory criticizes the culture. That's what the word critical in critical race theory means. It means to criticize. It doesn't mean to analyze. So what you and I would do when we see the word critical, we think, well, yeah, we're going to critique that. And what we mean by critique, we mean an objective critique. All things being equal, we objectively critique something. But in critical race theory, the word critical means criticize. You criticize everything. And critical race theory criticizes everything. Everything. But its origins go all the way back to 1923 in Frankfurt, Germany, to the Frankfurt School, or what is formerly called the Institute for Social Research. The Institute for Social Research was founded by a German Argentine Jew by the name of Felix Weil. Last name was W-E-I-L. Felix Weil launched the Institute of Social Research for the goal of applying Marxist philosophical principles throughout Germany. But something happened. The Nazis showed up. The Nazis showed up in 1933 and shut down the Institute for Social Research. Why'd they shut it down? Because it was headed up by Jews. Nazis hated Jews. So they shut the Institute down. And what did the Institute for Social Research do? Well, we just packed our bags and moved to the United States. Columbia University in New York. And today, as I stand here in your pulpit, the Institute for Social Research, which was founded in Marxism, still is based at Columbia University in New York City. So critical race theory has its origins going all the way back to the early 1920s in the Institute for Social Research, or the Frankfurt School. Frankfurt School relocated to Columbia University in the 1930s, and then fast forward to the 1970s. The 1970s, out of the critical theory movement, began a movement called critical legal studies. Critical legal studies. So we go from CT to CLS. We go from critical theory to critical legal studies. Critical legal studies was primarily a group of white neo-Marxist legal scholars who got together to study the impacts of American jurisprudence, but through a Marxist lens of justice and equality. Okay? That was the CLS movement. What was important about the CLS movement is that that movement began a shift of Marxism being primarily an economic ideology to a cultural ideology. So now we have gone from Marxism being economic classism to where in critical legal studies you now have cultural classism. Okay? So in traditional Marxism, economic Marxism, it was the haves versus the have-nots. But in critical legal studies, it was the blacks versus the whites. It was the heterosexuals versus the homosexuals. Now we get into intersectionality here, and it becomes a cultural thing. So from the CLS movement, you got CT to CLS, and from CLS was born critical race theory. Critical race theory was born when a group of black neo-Marxist legal scholars got together at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the summer of 1989. Among that group of black legal scholars that got together was one Kimberly Crenshaw, who is credited with inventing the term intersectionality. You may have heard that name. Okay? There was also Derrick Bell, the late law professor, who was recognized as being the father of critical race theory. So those two individuals were part of that cohort that met at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the summer of 1989. And they formed the first movement of critical race theory. They got together because they thought that their predecessors in the critical legal studies movement, they weren't radical enough. They weren't leftist enough. So they took the baton from them and launched the critical race theory movement. And what's the result of this reproblematization that critical race theory is attempting to achieve? This reproblematization. What's the result of that? Well, let me quote to you from Dr. Daniel Subotnick. Dr. Daniel Subotnick is author of a book titled Toxic Diversity, subtitled Race, Gender, and Law Talk in America. Dr. Subotnick wrote a white paper in 1998 titled What's Wrong with Critical Race Theory, subtitled Reopening the Case for Middle Class Values. So we've talked already about how critical race theorists want to reproblematize history. And what's the fruit of that? Well, Dr. Subotnick answers that question. He says, quote, with control of race discourse in their hands, critical race theorists turn their attention away from the legal academy and toward American culture in general. And this they have done with enthusiasm, developing and then applying new methods for that purpose. And scouring the broad landscape of American life, they have found race and racism implicated in a terrifying array of institutions and practices. Whites then, white people, stand accused and have remained largely undefended. Unquote. Now, what's the significance of what Dr. Subotnick is saying here? Well, the significance is, number one, he acknowledges that the critical race theory movement advanced the idea that the issues aren't just economic. They're issues of race and class. But he's also saying that what the critical race theorists has done is that they have so made white people the enemy that white people have no one to defend them. It's what I call a no-win situation. If you're white in critical race theory, you can't win. You can't win because the system is already, the cards are already stacked against you. You can't win. Dr. Subotnick says the critical race theorists have found race and racism implicated in a terrifying array of institutions and practices. Now, that doesn't mean that they found evidence of racism in these institutions and practices. When Dr. Subotnick says that crits have found race and racism implicated, what he's saying is that they are presupposing that race and racism are inherent in these institutions and practices. Not that they found evidence of it. And this is what you need to take away from from my talk this morning, that critical race theory is entirely presuppositional. It's entirely presuppositional. You don't have to prove anything. All you have to do is just assert that this is racist, that's racist, you're racist. And they don't have to prove anything. It's presuppositional. Critical race theory is built upon one main presuppositional thesis. And that thesis is, if you want a one-sentence definition of what critical race theory, it is this. Critical race theory is the idea that racism is the normal, common, and everyday experience of black people in America. That's what critical race theory is. Critical race theory presupposes that racism is the normal, common, and everyday experience of black people in America. That's a one-sentence definition of critical race theory. Is a presuppositional. You don't forget that. It is presuppositional, not objective, not evidential. Critical race theory is the presuppositional idea that racism is the normal, common, and everyday experience of black people in America. Now, let me give you an idea of how that presupposition has taken hold in society. The UCLA School of Public Affairs and Critical Race Studies says this on their website, quote, CRT recognizes that racism is ingrained in the fabric and system of American society. The individual racist need not exist to note that institutional racism is pervasive in the dominant culture. This is the analytical lens that CRT uses in examining existing power structures. CRT identifies that those power structures are based on white privilege and white supremacy, which perpetuates the marginalization of people of color, unquote. So here you have the UCLA School of Public Affairs and Critical Race Studies that has bought into that presupposition that racism's everywhere, that black people can't get out of bed without their sheets being racist or their slippers being racist or their shower being racist. CRT presupposes that racism's everywhere. This is why you get assertions of systemic racism. Because of CRT, racism's everywhere. This is where your being a theologian comes in again, because remember, by definition, what does systemic mean? By definition, by objective definition, this isn't Darrell's opinion, this is what you will see when you open any dictionary. By objective definition, systemic means that something is everywhere. It's pervasive. You have someone, perhaps you know someone, who's been diagnosed with cancer. The initial diagnosis says that the cancer was in one place, but maybe months later, it metastasized, it spread, became systemic, because the cancer's everywhere. But see, that can be objectively proven, that the cancer is everywhere. You can medically and objectively prove that a cancer has spread throughout someone's body. But in critical race theory, you don't need to prove that. You just need to say it. You just need to assert it. And it's taken as true. Dr. Daniel Subotnick, quoting him again from his book, Toxic Diversity, he says, quote, if race is central because racial supremacy is central to American culture, and that's exactly what critical race theory argues, that racism is central to American culture. If race is central because racial supremacy is central to American culture, then all features of American culture are presumed tainted. And in such an environment, racism can be presumed and need not be proved, unquote. I commend you to you Dr. Daniel Subotnick's book, Toxic Diversity, subtitled Race, Gender, and Law Talk in America. This is what I mean by how critical race theorists have the deck. The game is already set up against white people. You cannot win. Because in critical race theory, you just need to presume that everything is racist. It's presuppositional. Nothing needs to be proven. So you're at a loss. And by the way, in critical race theory, I don't know if you all knew this, but if you're sitting here today and you're not white, but you're not black, you're still white. You're still white. In critical race theory, that's how critical race theory defines white and black. If you're white, you're white. But if you're not white, but you're not black, you're still white. So if you're sitting here now, you're not black, but you're Asian, you're white. If you're sitting here now and you're Middle Eastern, but you're not black, you're white. You can't win in critical race theory. Matter of fact, I have a PowerPoint version of this presentation. I have one of the slides in that PowerPoint is titled, You Can't Win. That one slide I have dedicated only to white people. Because what you have to understand is that in critical race theory, you cannot win. So the white person asked me, well, what should I say? A black person comes up to me and says, you know, they want to talk about critical theory and the merits of critical race theory. First of all, keep walking. And then number two, you keep walking because you can't win that conversation. It's a waste of time. Don't even attempt it. Don't even attempt it because you're not going to get anywhere. The critical race theorist already has his or her mind made up that you're guilty. So if you're white, and remember, if you're not black, you're white. In critical race theory, you are guilty by existing. You're guilty by breathing. There is nothing you can say or do to the critical race theorists that will change their mind. Nothing. Let me go back and touch real quickly on this whole slavery thing one more time. Because slavery is the pet sin of the critical race theorists. That is the one sin they will not let go of. Because in critical race theory, it is presumed that only white people own slaves. That's historically inaccurate. That's objectively, historically inaccurate. Even during the Civil War, there were black people in the South who owned slaves. Thousands of them. Read the book by Larry Koger titled Black Slave Owners. That's a historical inaccuracy. Not only did white people own slaves, black people owned slaves. There would have been no transatlantic slave trade. There would have been no slavery on North American shores were it not for black Africans who participated in the transatlantic slave trade. If ever you were to come to Valencia, California, and I invite you all to do that, at your leisure, come to visit. Don't come to live there. Come to visit, then leave. Come back to Texas. If you were to visit my office at Grace to You, you would see that in my library, I have more books on the topic of slavery than any other subject outside of theology. I've studied slavery for probably 30 years. I stand before you right now as a descendant of black African slave owners. Owners. My paternal side of the paternal side of my family can be traced back to Guinea-Bissau, West Africa, to the Balanta tribe, B-A-L-A-N-T-A. The Balanta people were rice harvesters. The Balanta tribe willingly and volitionally participated with the Portuguese to sell not only their African family members, but also captive Africans that the Balanta had captured in war, sold them to the Portuguese in exchange for farming tools so that their rice harvest could be more productive and they could become more wealthy. So one lie that is among the many that critical race theorists like to perpetrate is that only white people own slavery, own slaves. That's a lie. Black people own slaves, and I'm a descendant of black African slave owners. If you want to learn more about that, there's a book titled Planting Rice and Harvesting Slaves by Walter Hawthorne. It tells the story of the Balanta people and their participation in the slave trade. There's another book by Basil Davidson titled The African Slave Trade. He begins that book in the introduction by acknowledging the role that black Africans played in the slave trade. There's another book, An Atlas of the Transatlantic Slave Trade by David Eltis, with maps showing the progression of these ethnic transports, the Portuguese, the Danish, the British, all from West Africa into various countries and continents around the world. In the introduction on page 7 of that book, He acknowledges his own frustration, his own unbelief that black people just cannot acknowledge the fact that black Africans had a role in the slave trade. But these are the facts that critical race theorists don't want to hear because their entire ideology is presuppositional. I want to point you to a text that was read earlier this morning, 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 14 through 16. It says, "For the love of Christ controls us, having concluded this, that one died for all, therefore all died. And he died for all, so that they who live might no longer live for themselves, but for him who died and rose again on their behalf." And here's the key verse, 2 Corinthians 5, verse 16. "Therefore now we recognize no one according to the flesh." Why is this passage important? This passage is important because in critical race theory recognizes everybody according to the flesh. Everybody. That's how critical race theory operates. A critical race theorist will recognize a white person as white, not as a fellow image bearer of God. "You're white, so you're my enemy." Critical race theory is an entire worldview that identifies everyone according to the flesh. Now, three pillars upon which critical race theory is built. I told you that the number one thesis for critical race theory is that it's a presupposition that racism is the normal, common, and everyday experience of black people in America. Well, there's three other pillars that uphold that major one. I'm going to go through those real quick. Pillar number one is what's called interest convergence. The interest convergence thesis teaches that racism benefits and advances the interests of white people, but only and always at the expense of black people. So white person, you have what you have because you took it from a black person. You took advantage of a black person to get it. That's called the interest convergence. Where your interests and mine converge, you paid no attention to my interests and you proceeded to advance your own interests. That's what that teaches. It's also called material determinism. You got what you have, white person, at my expense. Number two, the social construction thesis. This thesis teaches that race and racism is a social construct. It's not biological or theological. So the critical race theorist has no idea about what Acts 17:26 says. It has no idea. Have you ever thought about this? That when you go to get information on your ancestry, you want to know where your heritage comes from or begins, they don't take a piece of your skin, do they? What do? They do a blood test, which aligns right with what the Bible says in Leviticus. It says the life is in the blood. They don't take a piece of your skin. They don't take a graft of your skin and say, you look like you're from... They take a blood test. This is really simple, folks. If you know your scriptures, you can totally demolish this whole worldview. You can totally demolish it. They do a blood test. Three, voice of color. The voice of color thesis teaches that ethnic minorities are better suited to talk about systemic oppression and marginalization. So in other words, if you're white, you have no right to say anything because you're the problem. That's called the voice of color thesis. You need to leave the voice to people of color. If you're white, zip it because you're the problem. You just need to shut up and listen. And remember now, you're white if you're not black. Richard Delgado and G. Stefanczyk, whose names you may have heard, in their book titled Critical Race Theory and Introduction, and if you want to get your toe in the water on what critical race theory is about, get that book. It's a small paperback book. It's a very easy read. It's called Critical Race Theory, An Introduction. In that book, Richard Delgado and James Stefanczyk say this, quote, "Critical race theory builds on the insights of two previous movements, critical legal studies, I told you about that, and radical feminism, to both of which it owes a large debt. It also draws from certain European philosophers and theorists, such as Antonio Gramsci, Michel Foucault, and Jacques Derrida," unquote. Now, the problem with that is that in telling you and crediting, in their own words, and giving credit to people like Antonio Gramsci, Michel Foucault, and Jacques Derrida, what Jean Stefanczyk and Richard Delgado don't tell you is that all three of those men were Marxists. All three of them. And here they are giving them credit in their book on critical race theory. In the book, The Devil and Karl Marx, Dr. Paul Kengor, professor of political science at Grove City College, said this in the chapter in that book titled Fundamental Transformation. Please listen closely. Dr. Paul Kengor from the book The Devil and Karl Marx said this: in a crucial respect, classical Marxism and cultural Marxism will always bear an essential, enduring commonality, one that explains a lot about today's modern left. Both classical Marxists and cultural Marxists see history as a series of struggles that divide the world into hostile and antagonistic groups of oppressors and the oppressed. Both seek out victim groups as the anointed group that will also serve as society's redeemer group. The victim group becomes the agent for emancipation in ushering in the new and better world. The Marxist must always then be on the search for the newest victim class, which in turn must always be made aware of its victimization. Its consciousness must be raised. In classical Marxism, this was simple. The victim group was identified by class economics. It was the proletariat. It was the factory worker. In cultural Marxism, this has not been so simple, because the culture is always changing. The victim group is constantly being searched for anew by the cultural Marxists. They are looking less for the factory worker than the cultural worker. Forget the factory floor. That project failed long ago. The new recruiting ground, and you need to pay attention if you have children in public school. The new recruiting ground is the classroom floor, the campus, the university, the schools. That is where the cultural workers who can usher in the fundamental transformation are being sought and being found. These modern cultural revolutionaries are succeeding magnificently in redefining everything from marriage and family to sexuality and gender. This is where today's Marxists in America and the West are toiling hard. They are working diligently on the cultural front. This is why you need to be paying attention to what's going on in your public school systems. Now, even all the way in California, I know that some of the hottest battles when it comes to putting critical race theory in public education have been happening right here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. You better be paying attention, because this is the goal. Ultimately, this is where they are confident, the Marxists, rather, cultural Marxists, this is where they are confident that they can finally take down the West and its Judeo-Christian bedrock that Marx and a long line of disciples look to smash. It's the public school system. They want the minds of your children. This is what they want. And if you're not paying attention, shame on you. I say that in all seriousness. Cultural Marxists are your child's teachers. They're your child's administrators. They're your, in some churches, they're your pastors. In places where you work, they're your boss. But critical race theory, this is why these fights are so heated when it comes to local school districts, because they want to get these programs into your school under the guise of ethnic studies. Remember, they're not going to call it critical race theory. It's ethnic studies. And they're going to teach these principles and precepts to your children. So one day your child's going to come back hating you, mother, father, as oppressors. You're not parents anymore. You're oppressors. They have turned your children into tiny little Marxists. I want to quote from a teacher in just a second. Well, before I do that, and I'm about to close here in a couple of minutes, let me give you five reasons why critical race theory is unbiblical. We'll go through these real quickly. Five reasons why critical race theory, number one, is unbiblical. Number one, critical race theory categorizes image bearers of God into groups for the purpose of causing division and antagonism. Critical race theory is unbiblical because it classifies image bearers of God, of which we all are. Even unbelievers bear God's image. But critical race theory categorizes those image bearers into groups for the purpose of division and antagonism. Number two, critical race theory is unbiblical because it imparts sinful motives to certain of God's image bearers solely on the basis of the color of their skin. This is what critical race theory does. Especially to white people, it imparts guilt to you by virtue of being white. You haven't done anything to them. But the sin is that you're white. Number three, critical race theory transfers the guilt of presumed sins of those from past generations to those of present generations. That's what I call sin by proxy. So if you're white, you're guilty by proxy for the sins that they assume your ancestors committed against people who look like me. But as we've already talked about, there also, I have ancestors who look like me who sinned against people who look like me. But that, they don't want to acknowledge. Number four, critical race theory is unbiblical because it is rooted in the sin of ethnic partiality. That's James chapter 2, verse 9. Critical race theory is all about ethnic partiality. And lastly, number five, critical race theory is unbiblical because it promotes materialistic covetousness and envy under the false pretense of justice and equity. So that's five reasons why critical race theory is unbiblical. Now, there's a lot more that I want to say to you this morning about this subject. But in the interest of time, I'm going to begin my close here by quoting from an article titled Christianity or Critical Race Theory by Dr. Eric B. Watkins. Because the fundamental question you want to leave here with is, and be able to answer, is critical race theory compatible with Christianity? That's the question. Is critical race theory compatible with Christianity? Well, let me answer that question by quoting Dr. Eric B. Watkins, who says this, quote, is critical race theory's worldview compatible with Christianity? This is an important question. While it may be possible to find Christians who endorse critical theory, it is nearly impossible to find critical theorists who endorse Christianity. I dare you to find one. I dare you to find one critical race theorist who adheres to orthodox biblical Christianity. Continuing to quote Dr. Watkins, this is because Christianity is an overarching system of thought that seeks to define reality and posits objective moral values. According to critical theory, Christianity fosters unsafe ideologies and institutions that perpetuate anti-scientific thought, intolerance for certain sexual behaviors, parochialism, patriarchy, and a punishing authoritarianism for any who do not conform. Pre-Enlightenment Christianity is seen as stuck in the dark ages of intellectual barbarism, and the post-Enlightenment church is viewed as perpetuating colonialism, racism, sexism, chauvinism, and homophobia. Critical theory is critical of virtually all worldviews, including Christianity. Its goal is human autonomy from any objective authority whatsoever. Now, I don't know if you've noticed this or how closely you've been following this whole critical race theory debate, but the only religion, for lack of a better word, that the critical race theory has a problem with is Christianity. Doesn't have a problem with Islam, doesn't have a problem with Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, Zoroastrianism. It doesn't have a problem with any other faith-based worldview other than Christianity. Ultimately, the target of critical race theory is God. Ultimately, the God of the Bible, that is. That's the ultimate target of critical race theory. Now, I want to close with this. And I want to emphasize this again. In all seriousness, if you have children in the public school system, please pay attention to what I'm about to say. I'm about to quote to you from Ms. Teresa Montaño. Ms. Teresa Montaño heads up an organization called Liberated Ethnic Studies, a Marxist organization of public school teachers, which is based where? Where else? California. This is Teresa Montaño. She said, the quote I'm about to give you, she said this in a Zoom call. This video is available on YouTube if it hasn't been taken down. She said this in a Zoom call to fellow members of this organization, Liberated Ethnic Studies. This is why, if you have children in public school and are able to pull them out, pull them out. Ms. Montaño said this, quote, Ethnic studies is more than pedagogy and content. Ethnic studies is about creating change in the community. And what you will see in the lessons that follow are how classroom teachers begin to use critical race theory connected to their ethnic studies. You see, she's connecting the two. I told you, if you see someone saying, well, we're going to start teaching an ethnic studies program, it's critical theory. It's critical race theory. She says, what you will begin to see in the lessons that follow are how classroom teachers begin to use critical race theory connected to ethnic studies in a way to empower and to create social justice activists out of our students. Unquote. That's a quote, folks. I've got it cited right here. She's saying the quiet part out loud. The goal of teaching critical race theory under the guise of ethnic studies is to create social justice activists out of your children. So if you've been asleep on this, you need to wake up. You need to wake up. You got people by the thousands probably moving from California to Texas every day. My wife and I have lived in California for 3 years now, and I can promise you they're bringing their liberalism with them. And one of their first targets in turning Texas into East California is your schools. They're going to get jobs as teachers, as administrators in your public school systems, and they're going to start indoctrinating your children. That's why 2 + 2 can equal 5 now, because schools aren't about education anymore. They're not interested in your child knowing how to count and how to read, how to form a sentence. They're interested in, as Teresa Montaño said, creating social justice activists out of your children. That's the goal of critical race theory. Critical race theory is not some innocuous, innocent way of teaching history. It's not. It's not some, it's an all-encompassing worldview. It's eschatological in that it wants to replace this world with something else. The word eschatology doesn't have just to do with the end times. Eschatology has to do with something ending and then something else beginning. Critical race theory is an all-encompassing worldview that is steeped in cultural Marxism and that shares the same ends as that which I quoted earlier from Dr. Paul Kilgore, namely the takedown of the West and its Judeo-Christian bedrock. That's the goal. Thank you all very much for having me this morning. I appreciate it.